Welcome to another episode of the Record of Lodoss War OVA Rewatch Podcast. My name is Alan.
And my name is Kate. We run ReverseThieves.com. That's where you can find all of our other podcasts as well as blog posts every week.
And if you have any comments about the podcast or your memories of Lodoss War, you can contact us on Twitter. My name is HisuiRT.
I'm NarutakiRT, and we also have ReverseThieves on Twitter.
And if you just want to send us an email or maybe an audio file that we can play, you can send it to ReverseThieves@gmail.com. Welcome to Lodoss Island. In this chapter of the replay, we discuss the plot of the episode.
This is episode 4, The Grey Witch. And picking up from the end of last episode, our band of heroes is trying to go to the capital of Alania and let the king know what has happened and that Marmo is attacking. And they aren't able to get into the capital and they're just sort of turned away immediately. Nobody cares who you are. You don't matter. Goodbye. And we find out that it doesn't really matter anyway because the news of Marmo's attacks have spread throughout the land and King Fawn of Valis, who is probably the next on the list, let's say, is sending an envoy of the princess to the King of Alania, you know, as a messenger and try to sort of formulate a plan.
Well, isn't Alania the next on the list from what we found out in this episode?
Well, Alania has already been attacked.
Oh, I gotcha. Parn takes the rejection really well. He's like super mature about it, formulates a solid plan that everybody gets behind. Or he complains like a petulant child and runs off. While that's going on, Beld is talking to the king of the country he has conquered, and him and his people refuse to give up, which means that Beld gives him the thumbs down, as it were, by splashing some wine on the ground and has him executed. And then we get some villain talk about what the next plans are.
Then our heroes end up following behind Parn, who has no idea where he's going except that he wants to go to Valis and he wants to get there as quickly as possible. And the quickest way is through the Forest of No Return. As the name suggests, this might not be the best plan, but luckily Parn has many people who are useful in his group that aren't him. And despite his sort of protest that, hey, you guys don't have to follow me, I'm just gonna do this, whatever, you know, he has good people. And Deedlet's like, it's the Forest of No Return, I just happen to maybe be from there and know how to get through, so let's do this thing. Before she starts to guide them through, she tells them that extreme emotions really affect the trees, so to try to be as calm as possible as you go through the Realm of the Fairies, but also that the Realm of the Fairies is a place of illusion and time slows down there, so we can't chill out very long.
So, of course, immediately, people start falling for illusions. People start having strong emotions. First, Parn almost gets dragged away, but they actually rein him in pretty easily. The weak link in the chain is Woodchuck, who almost gets taken away, but then Gim saves him, but gets even farther along, and then Parn has to go and save Gim, and they barely make it out.
And as Gim is being attacked by the trees, we're seeing the memories, what his mission is, what happened with Nice and Lelia. And he also sort of is muttering some things, so the group finally gets a little bit of insight into what Gim's ultimate goal might be and why he is on this journey.
But before they can press him for more details, there is trouble in the woods as the princess's cart is being attacked.
There's a pretty intense carriage chase with lots of fireballs.
Mm-hmm. And lots of dead guards. Parn, once again, charges into battle. Whoa! And once again, fortunately, someone more competent goes with him, so Slane prevents him from getting fireballed. But when they catch up to the cart, neither of them is really a match for Carla, who doesn't seem to kill them, mostly because she just seems to be amused by the fact that Parn keeps coming at her. And, like, makes a modicum of advancement towards her. She can really kill him at any time. But she's like, oh, I'm just curious how long this is gonna last.
And this is the first time, chronologically, that the group is seeing her. So this is her reveal as this very, very powerful sorceress. Slane has a big reaction. You know, he just can feel the power emanating from her. And when Gim catches up, he freaks because this is Lelia. This looks like the person that he is looking for, but it also can't be her. It doesn't make sense. And at the very end, Carla gives Parn the princess. She had this whole plan, but she was like, you know what? Here, just have this princess. It's fine. It's cool. Don't worry about it. And, you know, Carla, I think in that moment, there's two ways you could interpret it. And I'm sure that when you first watch the series, you're probably like, well, that doesn't make any sense. And I'm just calling, like, oh, plot convenience. Mm-hmm. But Carla reveals herself over the course of the series to be a character with very, very strange sort of abstract motives. So it's not actually that weird.
And since they have the princess back, we jump to the forces of evil where Wagnard gets a collect call from evil itself. And he is told to resurrect the dark god of Lodos.
And is possessed, I mean, by... I find it, it's like, wait, so you're not the dark god, but you are the dark god, but if you need to be resurrected, like, why don't you just live in this form? I guess it's just not powerful enough, it's just enough to get, you know, get him back to where he needs.
He's Ganon before the big fight scene at the end of Most Zelda. He has enough evil power to influence people, but he really wants to be resurrected in his full form so he can really get down to the business of destruction.
By the end of this episode, we get a lot of different evil perspectives of villains. Like, they're all doing their own thing. So they're somewhat allied, but not as much as you might think.
Asher, I'm not a big fan of Carla.
Leveling up. In this chapter of the replay, we discuss player and character growth.
Well, if there's one character who does not grow throughout this whole episode, it is Parn, because he does the same thing again and again and learns nothing from it. Because every time his plan is charge, like he's Scrappy-Doo. He should just go, puppy power! And then it is up to some other member of the group to pull his ass out of the fire.
I guess he did technically save a princess in this episode.
He was not totally ineffective. I just don't feel like he learned anything.
Oh, he was totally ineffective. I'm just, like, technically he saved one. But that was simply because Carla gave it to him.
The rest of the party just pulled his ass along, and then the bad guy was just like, eh, I don't feel like it anymore. Here you go. Done. Goodbye.
And I feel, once again, Deedlit is, she was very useful in the previous episode, and this episode is also showing her strengths, and they just happened to go through an elf land, so she was basically the only person that was going to get them through there, so.
And she did use one of her elemental spells to at least make Carla pause. I mean, Carla really wasn't injured or hurt or anything, but you do feel like she was like, all right, a high elf and a sorcerer and this kid who keeps, like, moving around. This is just not worth my time anymore.
And speaking of the sorcerer, Slane must have rolled really well or something for him to be able to deflect Carla's fireball. I thought that was very impressive.
I mean, it is one of those things where, like, if he has counterspell, sometimes all you have to do is beat, like, a, depending on, like, what edition and what kind of spell, sometimes you just have to beat, like, a fixed number, which makes counterspells super valuable. I mean, to go back to the Slayers podcast, like one of the reasons that Lena kept around Naga was that she had Flow Break, which is that world's counterspell. It was like one of the highest level white magics, just because it could counter other magic. So I feel like Slain just consistently shows that he has good spell picking abilities. And so just having a good counter spell will save your ass more than a lot of other things, especially if you're up against other sorceress types.
And I feel like Woodchuck really gets lots of negative points for this because he really brought everything down with his greed.
Or Kate. Did he do really well because he was role-playing his characters and playing his flaws?
No, but wouldn't you say, we were joking when we were watching it, that he lost his saving throw
Look. You, as someone who has played D&D, can attest that you can be role-playing at your best and sometimes the dice will just screw you over. How many times have you seen the best laid plans of mice and men foiled because of an ill-timed one or two? So, I mean, I feel like Woodchuck was playing his character, and then the dice just screwed him over. Although, I will say, the big role-playing game points would be Gim totally playing his character, finally letting out some of his secrets, but not, you know, still doing it in an in-character way, not just giving up all the secrets just because it would help the party, but he gives them the hooks there so that they can ask him more about his backstory and get out just enough for the players to know what they need to know, but him to still be in character. And so it's a tricky line to play, but I feel like Gim and his player did well there.
Well, then, should we be praising Parn's player then? Because they're so consistent.
You know, you see, Kate, as someone who's played in a bunch of games, there's always that character who's playing their character really well, and everybody hates them for it. Sometimes you play your character really well and everybody loves you, and sometimes you pick that character and everyone's like, oh man, I hate when Frank plays this kind of character. And I feel like everyone's like, yeah, Joe, he's playing his charge character again, getting us all in trouble. All right, we've got to pull his bacon out of the fire. Okay, so points for character consistency, points away for the rest of the group, secretly hoping that you don't show up the next session.
I do feel, at least in the characters themselves have sort of accepted Parn in this way, because I think at one point somebody's like, look, it doesn't even matter you're just gonna do it. And we're just, you know what? Let's not even have this whole thing about how we argue about it and then da-da-da and whatever. Let's just pretend that we did that and we're just gonna do what you want because you're just gonna go that way.
Either that or we have one of those groups where everybody is like a 3-hour discussion to like before they decide on which inn to sleep at. They're like, I gave you 3 names, just pick an inn. And they're like, no, I think we have to choose the right inn. And so the GM just brought in a player that he knew would move. No, invite Joe. Joe will just move these things along. What? Why plan? I'm gonna go into the forest with no return. And the rest of the group hates him. And the GM is like, yes.
He makes things happen.
Yes. Joe, every time. Gotcha.
Sword World Supplements. In this chapter of the replay, we discuss fantasy and RPG tropes and elements.
So I think the one that stood out to me the most in this one is the Forest of No Return. I mean, very classic name for a place, and just the kind of just the whole concept of it is so perfectly trope, right? Because even just the idea that the trees can sort of see into your heart's desire or whatever, that's that secret or whatever it is, and then how it sort of manipulates you and the illusions in the forest.
I was about to say, Kate, thank goodness they had a ranger to guide them through that forest. Although I feel like Dietlet at this point is like half sorceress, half ranger, depending on what they need her. They need her to throw around some elemental spells against Carla. She's a sorceress. They need her to get through a dark forest filled with mysterious magical trees. They have her ranger abilities. She's got the forest survival and the tracking skills. You know, every time you would roll tracking, 100% success. Nothing but good things.
Yes, absolutely. That's been my experience.
We also do get classic having to save the princess, which I feel if Parn was less of a headstrong character, maybe a little better at being headstrong, could be a chance for great heroics as opposed to underwhelming heroics that happen to work in the end.
And I feel even the way that he, I'm going to say, quote unquote, gets that mission where the soldier is dying in his arms and he says, please, you know, save the princess. Just very, it happens so quickly, but it's also, I think, a classic passing on the goal, you know, the dying wish over to the hero.
I also just enjoy the story interruptus of it all, where, like, Kim is about to lay out the whole story, but nah, you only get half of it here. You'll have to get the other details later on. Although we do get...
I was going to say, do we know any... I thought it was... Laelia disappeared. Nobody knows what happened to her.
Well, I mean, he didn't mention, like, why he went on the quest.
I
presume that he would have, if they had given him more time, because he seemed to have more to tell, the little he would have told us. I heard a story about a witch who looked like Layla, and that's why I set on the quest. But that pretty much gets answered the minute he sees Carla, and it's like, oh, pop, 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 Layla, what are you, blah, blah, blah. So I think, I can't remember if that gets explained in the next episode, but that's all I think that was still there. So they technically get the answer to what would have happened next in the story, even if they don't realize it. We did get some classic evil tyrant behavior from Beld as he sits on the conquered throne judging the conquered king. And he does, you know, the man before him does not have the answer he wants. He tips over the glass of wine onto the carpet, which seems, you know, hey, just conquered this castle. Why mess up the carpets? But, you know, I guess if you're an evil overlord, dramatic effect is more important than the carpet budget. He pours over the wine on the floor as a symbol that like this blood pours, so shall he. We also have the classic goal of all evil wizards. Ragnarok finally gets his calling as the Dark God of Lodos contacts him and is like, resurrect me! Which I feel is, you know, one of the classic evil villain goals. Although, before that was happening, Ragnarok seemed pretty like, I don't know why we're so into this whole conquering the world thing, or at least conquering the island. You know, all men must die. Everything goes to death.
I was going to say, I thought you were going to mention the classic thing of a villain just randomly speaking aloud to themselves and then having, in this case, a more evil being noticed and decided to possess them, but just someone overhearing it because for some reason they're just speaking aloud. And I mean, as a person who does talk to themselves when they're alone, I kind of get it, but it's just, I think it's sort of this funny trope that happens a lot in fiction and sometimes in a really weird way that makes no sense, that it's literally just there so someone can overhear it.
Look, Ragnar used to journal, but then some of the orcs found his journal and started making fun of him and his dark emo poetry, so he stopped writing down what he thought and now he just speaks it aloud. And now the orcs just make fun of him when they hear his dark evil tree. So we get a lot of, since they're in the Forest of Temptation, you know, the forest tries to show you these illusions that like draw you off the little path to safety. Parn being the classic hero, he has, you know, his father calling to him, you know, his legendary father trying to draw him out. Woodchuck being the greedy thief, of course, just has base desires. Slain, Deedlit, and Ato seemed pretty unaffected by the forest. And Gim was doing good, but when he got too drawn in, saving Woodchuck, that's when, you know, the Layla finally gets him. Dean was like, of all of you, the dwarf is the one I'm worried about the least with strong emotions. But if you prick him, he does bleed if you get him in the right situation. I totally forgot to mention this, but man, Ato doesn't do a lot other than wake up Gim. And Gim already seemed like half awake and like shushes away his help. Because like, other than him and Dietlet holding back Parn when he's like arguing with that guard. And then like I said, that wake up. Did he really do anything else this whole episode?
I feel I don't know. From my memory though, also, feels though he never really does that much, but maybe I'm just not remembering.
I mean, doesn't he like just essentially leave the party halfway through the story as they like give him like a fancy title and he's like, see you guys? So yeah, I guess that's just, I just never, at least had a little few more lines before this point. He was practically an NPC at this point. One last thing before we go. This is their whole confrontation with Carla. Now that I think about it, it feels like one of those boss battles you can't win. You just have to survive a certain number of rounds or like do a certain amount of damage to like, if they have like a million hit points, you just have to do like 10,000 and then, yay, all right, you did enough. The battle ends. You didn't defeat them, but you survived long enough or did just the minimum amount of damage to end this fight.
That's a really good call. I think you're right. Because, yeah, then, of course, and that's always with the second-in-command or the big villain so that they can just get some story out there.
And you could kind of get an idea of what it's like fighting them, but also realize that right now at your level, you're nowhere near the level to properly beat them. Sometimes you'll also do that in, like, D&D. Just have a fight that the players can't win, but give them, oh, man, we really gotta now look at a way to defeat this person, because if we try this again, it's not gonna work.
The Dungeon Master's Guide. In this chapter of the replay, we discuss comparisons between the book and the anime.
So most of the things from this episode are from parts of the book, but they're kind of a mishmash and they're a little modified in a lot of ways. In many ways, it's kind of almost like bookkeeping. Like, since they made a lot of changes and put in a lot of whole cloth stuff, this seems to be one of the episodes that trying to get things that they left out or scenes that they want but have been passed by, they rearrange it so that they can all, you know, get in some valuable information and get some scenes that they passed by earlier on the story.
It's interesting. So I think last episode, we had gotten through about halfway of chapter 2. And then this episode is portions of chapter 2 and portions of chapter 3. So in general, in the book, you don't get a ton of scenes that aren't of the main heroes. You might get a little, like, 3-4 paragraph viewpoint from another character, maybe Beld or Carla, but it's very, very small compared to the rest of the story. So much of it is only from the viewpoint of our heroes. So, like, a lot of the stuff in this episode is just, like, completely new. Also, this whole Wagnard plot is not, you know, not yet, if at all. Having only read the first book, I don't know if that is a plot at any point, but that's just like,
what makes me think you're right about that is that, like you said, the OVA had an anime original ending, and so this sets up a lot of what appears to be in the anime original section, so, or it might be modified from things that happen in the book in different ways.
But I guess what is similar about sort of the second half of chapter 2 and a good portion of chapter 3 is this idea of really introducing Carla, like getting her, you know, into the hero's story, them sort of encountering her and getting a taste for like what her attitude is, and bringing in Gim's story about her, and then the Force of No Return. So the Force of No Return is also from the book. Now, the thing that's very interesting, I thought, was, which I think the anime, it makes, is better about this, but like in the book, The Force of No Return, Jesus like, hey guys, there's a lot of dangers in here. Don't do these things. And everyone's like, cool, we didn't. We made it through. The end. there's no drama to it because everybody clearly made their roles and everything was cool and fine.
And it was more kind of an introduction to the spirit world in the Land of the Fae, and that Deedlit has a connection with it. And that, yeah, it's more about, it gives actually Slain and Deedlit a little time to shoot the breeze about magical theory and spiritual theory. And then Eito also throws in his two cents about all of that. So it's basically all the magic characters talking shop, and then they go through the forest. And all the other characters like, that is some magic talk.
And then we skip over some things from the book, and then we arrive at this carriage scene, which happens slightly differently, but is essentially the same. Because in the book, the princess is trying to sneak out of the kingdom, like, on purpose. She's not a messenger. She's basically trying to go to the front lines, because in the book, the soldiers are already at war. Like, the kingdom is already moving against Marmo, I guess. Because she wants to go to the front lines, and everyone's like, that is a terrible idea. Let's not have you do that. And so she decides to, you know, get her way out of the capital secretly. And so they're being pursued by soldiers. So it's just kind of like a longer scene. But Carla is very involved because she's like, that's a great idea. You know, you should get in this carriage and we should go and like everything will be cool. So she is kidnapping the princess, but she's kind of tricked her, as opposed to here, she's just pursuing her.
And I think they have a little more of a running battle in this one.
In the anime.
Yeah, in the anime. Oh, no, I think in the book they Slain and Deedlit throw a few more spells at her.
No.
Oh.
I actually think that they don't even get, like, oh. They get to the, because this scene, the fireballs are flying and people are dying, and there's a soldier who's like, save the princess. I mean, that all happens.
Yeah, right,
but
right.
But Carla has disappeared at that point. She's right, like, right. They see her from a distance, but they don't actually interact.
Did they fight a bunch of like people attacking the carriage or something?
No, there's two carriages the book. There's Carla's carriage with her henchmen, and then there's the soldiers pursuing them. So there is a battle, but our heroes are watching from a distance.
Right.
No, instead of Carla encountering the heroes right away and having the exchange with the princess, in the book, Carla has disappeared and has successfully kidnapped the princess and has gone away to her, like, mansion. And the heroes have to go and find her. So that's, like, a whole other sort of, like, side plot thing that happens. And then remember in the book, there's also some like weird, like that mansion is super weird and a bunch of weird stuff happens when they go there, which since they have the princess back now, I'm going to assume none of that happens.
Yeah.
But maybe not, because I swear that somewhere in here, they do go to some sort of like weird house or are looking for something, and there's a dark elf there. So I feel as though maybe some of this does come back up, some of the things that they have skipped in the book.
So yeah, I guess we'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
My memory is sort of starting to fail me in these middle episodes, so that I don't actually remember what happens next, which is pretty exciting, right? Okay, so something I keep forgetting to mention, and I've meant to the last couple of episodes, is that we've talked a bunch about how Deedlit is different in the book, but one thing I don't think we've mentioned is that in the book, they constantly talk about her being a child, like the size of a small child.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just thinking about the difference. This is like very elegant, statuesque, sort of beautiful character in the anime. And again, it's a Lena inverse character, I feel like, in the book. And they just keep describing her as like, oh, I thought that was a child.
Well, I mean, that is the classic difference between D&D elves and Tolkien elves. Because Tolkien elves are, you know, tall and blonde and beautiful and just, you know, mottled. Whereas D&D elves are actually shorter than humans and they're more, like, fairy-esque. Once again, you see that the book clearly came from the role-playing game elements, whereas the anime, especially with the Mines of Mordor scenes, is much more like, yeah, I like the D&D stuff and all, but people know Tolkien more, so let's go more Tolkien.
Or we're really into that, mm-hmm. and, you know, we want to have that element, so.
Oh, and one last thing, just because he does, like I said, he barely shows up in the original book. I did not remember the Carla Ashram beef starting this early, because, I mean, everybody's a little uneasy about Carla, but she's useful, so they keep using her, which was true to the book. But Asher really, in this episode, seems to have a, just beyond like a level of distrust, like, I will kill you the moment I get the chance.
Revelations from Cardass. In this chapter of the replay, we discuss our favorite parts and final thoughts.
So I think we all got a really good chuckle out of the part where Carla says something like, only fools attack without knowing the enemy while speaking to Parn. And Carla, I have to say, I, of course, I remember her from watching this series before, but I have to say she's consistently one of my favorite parts, which I don't remember that being so when I originally watched it. So maybe that's like a change for me, but she has some good lines. Also, she has a really super dramatic bolt of lightning scene here at the very end. So that was very good too.
I think she bolts a few times for dramatic effect, but yeah, her big finale is to lightning bolt and then disappear.
And somehow she's done this multiple times in the series, which I love, is that she uses some sort of illusion spell to make herself look really tall and much larger than she actually is.
Look, Kate, when you're running around with people like Bell and Ashram and Wagner, you gotta give yourself a few inches just to get some respect.
I think that makes sense. You know, she's really just dedicated to the drama.
The theatrics.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I appreciate that.
My favorite part was when Parn, at the beginning, when Parn is yelling about, like, you've got to let me in and talk to the king, and, like, we just came from this fort. And the guy's like, yeah, one fort is good if it saves the whole country. And Parn's just ranting, and they have to, like, pull him back. And then he just does that, like, pouty, I'm gonna go to Valis anyway, because it's cooler in Valis.
They're better. The king there will care.
And just his, like, little hissy fit as he runs towards the Forest of No Return. If you needed, what is Parn? Here is Parn in one scene.
I also think what he says when Woodchuck is talking to him about the Forest of No Return also sums him up really well, because Woodchuck is trying to explain, there's a reason why it's called the Forest of No Return, and maybe we should rethink this. And Parn says that he will be the first to get through the forest. If no one ever has, then he will be the one to do so.
Maybe he just thought that the Forest of No Return meant that, like, if you get a bottle with a deposit, you can't return it back for the 5 cents. 10 cents in Maine.
I also really liked the part where, I mean, it was just a little moment, but they pulled Gim out of the forest. They're all by the river, and Gim is sort of contemplating whether he's going to tell them or not. And Parn speaks up and is saying, you know, you don't have to if you don't want to. Everybody has their secrets. And Deedlit says, no. He endangered all of our lives. He better tell us right now. And I feel as though I have basically done this, that exact thing when playing D&D, is to be like, no, you don't have, no, we're not being nice, okay? We're in trouble, your fault, now explain yourself.
It's cool. No, that's a good call, Kate. That's me. Sometimes characters give you little leads and you can draw stuff out. Sometimes people like to have their precious little secrets. And sometimes the other PCs have to draw it out.
Or beat it out of them.
Or either that, or she's just genre savvy, Kate. And she knows if you don't press the character to tell their secret, then their secret will bite you on the ass in the worst possible way. Because you let them be quiet and not tell you the important detail. Like, hey, we finally ran through that Carla. What?
Yeah, I think that is a good call in Deedla's part. So I also have to say that I did not remember that Wagner just not randomly gets possessed by Cardus or the spirit of Cardus, whatever. But I really, in my mind, remembered him sort of welcoming it. Like, I thought that he was trying to resurrect Cardus and then got possessed. But I just didn't remember that he was just standing on the parapet of a freaking fortress.
And just thinking about life. Soliloquying
to him, you know. And then suddenly from the dragon, that he just decided that this was a really good time to, you know, possess somebody.
Yeah, the dragon was like, excuse me, sir, I have a call for you. What? Evil god wants you to do his bidding.
And I don't really know why the dragon was relevant, except that they try to get dragons in every episode, which we have said. We've mentioned.
Yeah, Kate.
I don't think there is a dragon ever in the book.
I think at most they like offhandedly mention that the dragons exist, but it's not like they see one or talk to one. Or
they have any relevance on this particular story.
Look, Kate, I'm sure that the staff, there was the big board that they had to look at every day. That was like, does this episode have an elf in it? It better. Does this episode have a dragon in it? It better. And the director would just like tap the chalkboard every time they started work in the morning.